The first round of the Geneva II conference has ended. UN Arab League mediator Lakhdar Brahimi tried to put a positive spin on the summit. And what does he have to show for it? Not even a 100% commitment from the Syrian delegation to attend the second round on February the 10th. Yet both sides did agree on one topic wholeheartedly and without reservation. A minute of silence for the dead from both sides. In this edition of the debate, we'll discuss how Geneva II failed to live up to any expectations, Iran's absence, and how far this conflict is from being over, which by some estimates could be prolonged for a year or even longer. Let's find out what our guests think about the Geneva II talks that have ended. Let me introduce them. Political analyst Randy Short joins us from Washington. And we have political commentator Jihad Morokadeh, who joins us from Beirut. Gentlemen, welcome. Jihad Morokadeh. Appears the Geneva II conference was successful in proving how far the two sides are on major issues instead of bringing them closer together. Do you even think these talks should continue in the present configuration? Randy Short, if you got my question to you.
Do I think the talk should continue? Yes, with a condition that they remove the troublesome clause that a transitional government, national government, this prevents the major stakeholder, which is the government of Syria, from really being able to work through what it is that they need to try to embrace what presently is their foes. But no government, no nation will hand over its sovereignty to its enemies, which it has beaten on the field, just because enemies in the region, the Gulf Cooperation Council, the United States and Israel, want this to be. That's a non-starter. It's a deal breaker. And this is why Geneva II is a fraud, to say to the people who've actually won and the thousands of Syrian soldiers and other victims of these terrorists that have stood and refused to give their country away, that they've got to now just openly bring these people to the table. And in reality, how can this even happen with another clause that says all the Syrian people have to be involved? If you have 9 million people displaced, there's no real way to get a consensus of what the people want.
Well, Randy Short, I'm curious, you know, this obsession with having Assad give up power, which is something that's been set as a precondition not only by the so-called divided opposition, but also by the U.S. and its allies. Knowing that that's a red line for the government, do you think that they want then making this request for the crisis and the war on Syria to just continue?
Well, actually, I believe that they're looking for a way to have another red line. I don't believe that the Zionists and the others have run out of tricks to ultimately find a way to use NATO and American boots on the ground to win the objectives to weaken Syria so Lebanon can be reinvaded and more wars can be waged against the Palestinians and others. So in reality, from my assessment, there is no real desire for peace. They want it to fail, but what they'll do is turn around and blame the Assad's government for a bad deal that they deliberately gave to them. President Obama, like his health care and other things, he's notorious for giving people really bad deals.
General Morokadeh, let's talk about the opposition. Some say it's too divided. Some say it's not representative of the complete opposition in the big picture, and that is one of the reasons why these talks really didn't bear results, at least in terms of them sitting face to face from the Syrian delegation. What is the deal with the opposition, this particular one by the name of SNC? Are they representative of the Syrian opposition? The Russian foreign minister says that internal groups should be represented in the future talks. Internal groups, meaning the internal Syrian groups who are opposed to the government.
For the time being, the Syrian opposition, which is sitting in Geneva, and to whom the delegation of the Syrian government is talking to, does represent the opposition, whether we want it or not. There's nobody else who represents the opposition. Yes, we would like a wider delegation, But at the end of the day, there are two parties sitting at this table. One party who is the so-called Syrian government, and the other party which is the opposition to the so-called Syrian government. And the Syrian government, by sitting together at the same table with this opposition, recognizes that there are people on the other side who do not accept the government of President Bashar al-Assad. The Geneva agreement, the Geneva One agreement, recognizes, and I would like to say this is not some kind of conspiracy. The paper of Geneva One was drafted by Foreign Minister Lavrov, the Russian Foreign Minister, and discussed with Secretary Hillary Clinton. They came out, both of them, with the idea that the two sides, so there are two sides to the table, not one side fighting some kind of insurgents. There are two sides to the table, and the two sides should sit together and reach some kind of agreement. Later on, in September this year, at the end of September, the United Nations Security Council, which includes Russia and China, as well as the US, France, and Great Britain, and other countries as well, decided that a Geneva II conference should be called for to implement the Geneva I agreement, which is to implement an agreement between whom? Between the Assad regime and the opposition to the Assad regime. So everybody recognizes there are two parties at the table. Now, if the opposition is representative or not, it doesn't really matter, because right now what matters is that these people are sitting there and talking to the Syrian regime and vice versa.
Randy Short, do you agree?
No, because you can't call a government that was elected so-called. And you can't call people who initially refused to have negotiations anything less than a conspiracy when they're funded by covert groups, whether they're helped by Prince Bandar or through the CIA or MI6. This in every way is a conspiracy, and it is an insurgency. There is, and there was a movement. Let me finish. I'm not going to be interrupted. I didn't interrupt you. And I'm going to continue what I have to say.
There are people in opposition to the government of Assad.
However, they got hijacked by these very dangerous groups that are armed by countries that don't have the best interests of the Syrian people one way or the other. So, I mean, whether this gentleman agrees or not.
But who are you to say so?
There's this dislike for the existing government of Syria. There's a process now by which if people stop fighting and agree to stop killing and putting people in ovens and cutting throats, that we can have elections. And let's see who the Syrian people vote for. I don't believe that these so-called opposition people, one-third of them didn't even want to go with the United States and its allies working against Syria, still didn't want to go in and talk at Geneva too. So let us be honest. There's an apprehension on the opposition side to even sit at the table and talk.
Enough.
Who am I? I'm a child of God. I hope you are too. And someone that believes in peace, and someone that's looking at this objectively.
These people that you want
to call a good opposition are murdering people. Yeah. And do you know what they're doing? What they're doing in Dara today,
and what they're doing to the challenges outside,
where they're putting people in ovens. Yeah, you know what? The regime at this point has not been the main group that's been doing the killing. Here you are attacking
the
regime.
You're
denouncing the regime,
and yet you are supporting people who are doing the very same things
that you say you do not like.
That the regime
did when this boy's father was president of Syria. Okay. So, you know, if we're going to go for it, let us just be honest.
All right, well, let's give Jared Marcotte a chance here. Jared Marcotte, go ahead.